The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats.com and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Here on Hot Takes on a Plate, we explore the things that make us feel and how those feelings collide with food. And since I've just been feeling kind of all sorts of out of sorts lately, the world feels like it's falling apart. And I feel like the show's been a little negative, a little intense lately. So I think this is one of those ones where we should have a little fun. And when I want to have a little fun, I call in the food court jester. I call in Ali Khan. Ali is one of those guys that, you know, you just bring him in when you don't really feel like working. He does the work for you. You just throw something at him. You wind him up and let him go. And then you just kind of get out of the way and let him do his thing. And Ali, I wanted to have you on because I know you got a new podcast. New podcast.
I want to be like you, Rob. I want to join the club.
And you know, I just love giving attention to other podcasts. That's what I do here. I've actually noticed the trend. I just love having people on who have quote unquote competing podcasts and throwing all my listeners their way. That's what I do. I'm a benevolent soul like that. But we'll definitely talk about the podcast in a minute. I wanted to talk to you today, Ali, about perfect pairings, because I know a lot of your podcast is about pairings, and I just wanted to throw some things your way and see what you think are the perfect pairings for the various things I'm going to throw your way. So this is
I think it's great because technically I'm the guy who's supposed to only know about food, and my co-host Steve Greer, who's a sommelier and a bev industry dude, he's the one who I go to for food. So it's great. Another opportunity to show the world that I'm notoriously unqualified for pretty much anything and everything. I'm down though.
Well, listen, I think you're going to prove otherwise, because I think you're going to have fun with these. I'm doing some reverse pairings here. So we're going to start with a drink, and then I need you to give me the perfect food to go with it.
Go. So, I'm ready.
Give me the perfect food to pair with the beverage that just doesn't seem to go away, that I thought was the beverage of two summers ago, that is still here, and it's growing because everybody's copycatting it, and that is White Claw. What is the food that goes with White Claw?
Well, I'm very proud to say that I've never drank White Claw, but I know enough of it to know that it basically is nothing with a little bit of booze.
So you know what it is? You know what White Claw is? It has become, I kid you not, my wife's happy juice. Like my wife on White Claw is my favorite version of my wife. So I'm just going to throw that out there.
So here's the real question. What's your favorite food? Because I feel like we just have to parlay her personality. I mean, I would say this. It strikes me as something, you know, it's fizzy. It seems like it's quenching. It seems like there's not that much alcohol in it. I feel like I would want to chase down like a super spicy Penang curry with it. You know, like there's probably more interesting beverages, but I'm almost thinking like, there are certain boozes, certain like, you know, Napa cab. I remember a guy telling me, oh, I had a Napa cab at steak. And he goes, that cab probably beat up your steak. And I was like, yeah, it kind of did. Like they're both good things on their own, but together it didn't just work. But, you know, again, without being a White Claw guy, but having some idea of it, I did drink Zima.
I was going to say, so not to get, you know, too sideways here, but like, I feel like Zima was just like too soon. Like Zima, like if Zima had come around now and just called itself seltzer.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think Zima, it's hard for me to say from a consumer thinking about the marketing world back in the 90s. But when you think about White Claw, you're talking about a post-Atkins world. I don't want to call it a post-diet fad world, but certainly a world where it's like, did you hear about this diet? Did you hear about that diet? And it's also the did you hear world, which means I Googled it and I saw it trending on freaking Twitter and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's funny because I remember drinking Zima. in high school, whatever, I'm 44, I can't go to jail now for that crime. But, you know, it was easier to drink than Bush, you know? I pounded that six pack. Like
I
a
love
man.
How, by the way, I love how beers, like, are, at least they used to be, and they still are to an extent with craft beer, but there was such a regionality to beer. Like, you just dropped Bush, and you just outed yourself as being a guy from St. Louis. You know, like our cheap equivalent when I was in high school was, I remember I had a friend, I'm going to go full redneck now. I had a friend whose dad was a member of a gun club, and he would get us into the gun club after hours. And I've never held a gun. There were no playing with guns in the gun club. The reason we went is there was a pool table and there was a vending machine. Again, Statue of Limitations. There was a vending machine with beer in it. And you could just put in a dollar and get a beer. And the beer we had was Genesee. Genesee was our Bush.
I've never heard of it.
But that's that, it's regional, upstate New York, baby.
Wow. I feel like, you know, I've seen a lot of crappy beers over the years. But they came out of a vending machine. That's pretty epic. I think White Claw, I think like just some crazy Thai. I'm thinking about Thai food. I'm thinking about like spicy and coconut milk. I'm thinking about even fish sauce. Just
see, that actually makes
like
sense.
So
you're really looking at it from a culinary perspective because that does make sense to me. I think I'm going to go more from a, I guess, like a perception standpoint. And to me, I think I would pair White Claw with Domino's pizza because to me, you're comparing basic with basic. You're pairing, you know, they're like, it's like the most basic food with the most basic beverage. But also, two things that were maligned that now I feel like they're both kind of in that Guy Fieri sort of sphere where like they were kind of maligned and now have like kind of come around to being cool again. Like sometimes things get so beat up culturally that people go, wait a second, it's not that bad. That's actually pretty cool. So I don't agree on the Domino's front. I think it's pretty garbage pizza. But anyway, some people do love it. So I think I'd go White Claw with Domino's.
Domino's. Yeah. I hear Domino's is not, I mean, Dave Chang likes it. I haven't had it in a long time.
Okay. Can we, look, Dave Chang has some bad, Dave Chang has some bad food takes, like really bad food takes.
Yeah.
Like I saw that dude say something about like, you want actually like a mealier, not as good tomato for like the perfect BLT. And it's like, get the heck out of here. Why would you like, just shut up. Just shut up. Shut up.
Yeah. I don't know why anyone, I feel like if you had a mealy tomato, you'd basically want to turn it into like tomato paste. You'd want to cook it down.
Let me give you one. Let me give you one that's up your wheelhouse. Let me give you one that's up your wheelhouse.
Okay.
All right. So you're in Texas, you're in Austin, you eat plenty of barbecue. What is the perfect drink for Texas style barbecue beef brisket? What is the perfect drink? And you can't say Lone Star.
Well, you know, if you want to get, I'll throw this just, and it's weird because I haven't had this drink either.
I wish people could see. I need to reference what this dog is because right now what you are not seeing on a podcast is there is a puppy in Ali Khan's lap that is climbing up him. That like looks like he's like the dog is using Ali like Ali's a ladder and is just working his way up him, and it is pretty darn adorable.
It's so funny. It's like a cute face can get you far. Paris Hilton and my dog, clearly. So there's a soda in Texas called Big Red. I've never had it, but I would be remiss not to at least bring up this very special regional drink. I don't really drink soda. I don't have a holier than thou attitude to it. I just have, there's only so many calories. I'm going to a lot. But, you know, Big Red is a thing. And I feel like, you know, whenever you're talking about a regional food, it's that hot Texas sun, man. You know what I mean? Like you want to like take advantage of what this land, what this environment provides. Brisket is interesting because half the year it's blazing hot like it is right now. I'm a whiskey guy. Brisket's tough, you know? So I could sit there and say like, I'd have bourbon with it. The last thing I want to do is drink bourbon right now. It's going to be, for me, a beer. And look, I'm just going to go with, I'll make
Bush.
It easy on myself. No. I'm going to go with a craft beer, Hefeweizen. There's actually a beer called Live Oak.
Okay, I can
one
see
of the things I found here, you know, I've noticed, like, when it's summertime in Austin, which is half the year, and there's a great craft beer scene, and I love IPAs, but I just can't handle it. It's too hot. I can't handle the syrupy stuff. A good craft Hefeweizen or Pilsner has enough body, enough of that, you know, beer jock hops that I'm like into, you know what I mean? But at the same time, it's not super, super heavy. And the brisket's really heavy. But I think brisket can stand up to whatever you like. It's just so powerful. It's just the weather thing. So, you know, I'm going to go with the craft Hefeweizen.
I can see that. Yeah, I that makes sense. I also think maybe like a juicy IPA, you know, something that's like kind of fruit forward, something citrus forward. I love the way acid plays with rich beef. Like when I make a steak, mm-hmm. I like using like a little bit of lemon in the pan. You know, if I'm like doing like a cast iron seared steak, like I love the way acid sort of cuts through the richness of beef. That's why I think the idea of red wine with steak is kind of, I don't know, like I think the idea of white wine with steak makes a lot of sense, to be honest with you, because I want something acidic to go with that fattiness.
You know, it's funny. I almost think like it's a, for me, when you talk about red wine and red wine, red meat, I almost gravitate towards the red wine that I, honest to God, don't like on its own. It's always those red wines that, frankly, become more interesting when I have a bite of cheese that I would have with the steak. You know what I mean? But like when I am chilling with a glass of red wine, you know, like a Central Coast Syrah kind of thing. And I'm no, I mean, I don't even, I barely drink wine anymore. I'm in Texas. It's really, really hot. I like whiskey and beer, but I did drink wine for a while. There's just red wines that people make all over that you just have on its own. Like it's not meant to have food really there. I mean, you can argue it, but it's like, I just think about that weird European, like you might like those super Tuscan wines where they're like, isn't it great? And I'm like, not really. But then I have some food and I'm like, oh, and I'm drilling through the glass, you know, like the food makes the wine work.
So and then conversely, I feel like with cocktails, like I love a good Negroni, but I don't really pair food with a Negroni. Like I kind of want that on its own, you know?
You know, that's why when I said bourbon and brisket, because brisket is probably Central Texas brisket, like from the craft place. So the super juicy, fatty, crazy bark brisket. That stuff is so strong. It's so strong that I don't eat it very often. You can't eat it every day. It's like too much. It's like smoking a cigar. It's enough. That's probably one of the few things where I'm like, you know, it's like you have a brisket, it blows away everything in your mouth. You have the bourbon, it blows everything away in your mouth. And you just go back and forth, back and forth. It's like smoking blunt. We're not pulling any punches here. We're going to get ripped. When the night is over, you will be hammered. That's how I feel about
you. I never thought when I had you on to talk about pairings that you would talk about smoking blunts. Wow. This is why he's here, everybody. This is why he's here. Is there anything worse?
Everyone uses the vape pen now. It's all
about
the vape.
Is there anything worse than the way your mouth tastes the day after you've smoked a cigar? Is there anything worse?
Yes. Well, there's something that hurts just as bad. Smoking a blunt. That's usually it's usually the next day, and it's been a long time. I think the last time. This is what's great about no longer being on contract with the network is like, you don't have to worry about, oh my God, am I going to get tough? It was 20, and also weed's like basically legal. But, I remember it was 2016, the last time I had a blunt. I remember the next day, like throat. I was like, that hurt. Why does that hurt? And I'm like, blunt, you know, cause you just, you know, you didn't, you know, it is a cigar and you're inhaling it. Very
no, I love I can relate to the not under contract anymore. I mean, hell, I just got to write in Esquire, you know, for Esquire, I got to write "Don't be a dick" in print, you know, on the internet, and that's not something I could have ever said when I was under contract doing a TV show. So it
and
is
it
nice to have that freedom.
Pieces,
well, thank
by
you.
By the way,
thank
I
you.
Shared that. I read that. I actually, first of all, here's a hot take. I actually read it. How often does that happen? A, thank God it was for Esquire, not Washington Post. I read it, and I could read it right away on my phone. Duh. And I sent it straight to my wife, who worked in hospitality as a bartender, waitress, manager for many, many, many years, lots of different restaurants. And it's just something that really, really resonates. And it's just an attitude shift of like, oh, did you know that times are hard? You know, like,
yeah, right.
I had to do the this is probably the most first world thing I could say, but I had to do curbside vet yesterday for my new puppy. And they're like, we're sorry, we're running behind. I'm like, that's cool. COVID and yeah. Stage 5, end of the world, Afghanistan falling. Yeah. I will look at my iPhone 12 Pro Max with air conditioning. It's cool. And they were like, well, thanks for understanding. I'm like, yeah, it's easier to just, let's just be cool. The world becomes a much easier place.
Exactly. I actually, my favorite thing about the response to that article was, I love when you don't, it's just amazing when you put things out into the world, like who it touches and what comes back to you. And you never know. I mean, the world just feels so big. Sometimes even when you're doing things for a big publication or a big network, you wonder like who's watching, who's listening. And then like somebody famous or semi-famous responds and you're like, whoa, like that's cool. Amanda Freitag commented on my Instagram and started following me. And I'm like, and she's like, this is great. And I'm like, that's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure you've had that experience where somebody gets in your Instagram or like, you know, you find out that somebody, you know, that you're like, kind of like, wow, like I'm sure you've had that experience before.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Amanda's probably one of those people who frankly engages with me on social media. And I'm just like, wow, that's really cool. I mean, it's funny. It's like, you just don't know what it's like in someone else's skin, and you always think the grass is always greener. So, I mean, depending on who you are, like if you're humble, like I would wager you and I both are, you're kind of like, oh, wow, I can't believe this person. But, you know, they're people too, and they deserve to be supported. Actually, it's interesting. Amanda had a horrible experience on Twitter with someone just saying garbage. I think we all reported it because it was like, this is, you know, like it was violent, you know, it was just ugly as could be. And you look at that and, you know, she was, I think, very grateful to all the people who supported her and stuff. And you're just like, yeah, you know, we're all people, you know what I mean? And we all care about things. And, but hey, you know, it's all because you hit a nerve, you know, and it's a great piece. So again, great job, because it's true, man. You know, like, how do you want to be in this insane polarized world? You know, you want to sit in the chair and point the finger, or do you want to like help out, you know?
And this thank is you and I love where, by the way, I love how we're talking about this, but we're giving it no context whatsoever. It's like we're just having a private conversation. If anyone cares to understand what we are talking about, I wrote a piece for Esquire basically saying, like, you know, the rules of dining out have changed in COVID, and you know, you might want to think about a few things before you go out and have your next meal. And if you are interested in reading it, it is in my Instagram bio. If you go to my Instagram at Rob Patron TV, you can go there and you can read about not being a dick. Anyway, Ollie, next thing I want to bring up to you with pairings. This one's different. This is not alcohol. This is not food. I mean, it is food, but it's not pairing food with drink. I want to talk to you about temperature. Specifically, the perfect temperature to cook pizza or to bake, I guess.
Technically,
pizza. So I've got this Uni oven now. I've been playing with. You know, most people when they make pizza, they make it in their home oven. You know, that might get up to 450, maybe 500. If you go to a pizzeria and they have what we call a deck oven, a gas oven, you know, that might get 500 or ish. Probably not much hotter than that. And then of course you get into your gas assist ovens, your wood fired ovens, your coal ovens, and those can range 600, 700, 800, 900, sometimes even 1,000 degrees cooking in under a minute. So I'm curious, Ollie, what you think is, I've done a lot of thinking about this, the perfect temperature to cook a pizza at.
You know, it's interesting because I have, in more recent years, gotten into the Neapolitan pie. And I love the char that comes from a high-temp wood-burning oven. So if you're talking about high-temp for me, it has to be wood-burning. I like the smoke. I'm pretty sure my dog is chewing on plastic. We're just going to ride that out of it. Give me this thing. Jesus, he destroyed. This is all that's left.
Oh, my God. Your dog and my dog would be best friends. My dog loves to take a toy, tear it apart, get to the plastic center, and just leave shreds everywhere. That's his thing. My dog also likes to, when it's bedtime, he will get in bed with us, then leave bed, and bring back a stuffy to bring to bed.
No joke. You know what? I know we're all over the place, but full disclosure, I have a stuffy too. I have my teddy from when I was two. Ah, geez, no nipping. We're not training the dog right now. So you asked about pizza temperature. This is hard because not all char tastes delicious. I'm very partial to the New Haven pie as well. Oh, so I want to say, without being a pizza chef, I want to get to possibly around 900.
Okay.
You know, I do like that high temp. Again, I'm a Neapolitan guy. I do like the wood burning stuff. And this is just a new discovery for me. Like for me, pizza was like, I want sausage and pepperoni or one or the other.
Midwestern.
You know, I'm eating. Yeah, Midwestern. But now I'm like, team margarita. It's delicious. Like, when I have a pie that simple and makes me love things that I don't think about initially. Like, for me, like, ooh, let's make steak. That's a Saturday night dinner. Well, now I'm 44, Rob. I'm bored. You know, like, my palate, my brain might say steak. My palate's like, oh, well. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I want to have the other stuff. So, and I love to eat the crust. So I like it a good char. I've been watching some of the Portnoy stuff too and just seeing those pieces. I want to say 900. I mean, I want one of those ovens that you have, by the way, big time. And especially if there's wood in there too. But yeah, I'm into the 30. I mean, it's just funny because it's not everything. But I, like I said, I've been into crust. I like a good char. So I won't go hot. Go 900.
Okay.
Look, take it to 900.
Okay. A couple things. One, I love a wood burning oven, but I will say you can get just as hot with gas, and I don't think it really affects the flavor. I do think what the wood gives you is it gives you the aroma, which does technically affect the flavor, I guess, because when you smell things, it does change the way it tastes. That's science from what I understand, or so I've heard. I would have answered about 900 if you asked me this a couple of years ago. And I have actually changed my thoughts on this. So, because I think you get different results doing different things. And I think when you get, so here's the thing, when you get to that 900, you do get that leoparding, you get that char, which is great, but you really can't develop a whole lot of crispness. You know, you'll get a fluffier, chewier, because there's just not enough time.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
If you want to get crisp, but you also want to get some color on it, I think that 650 area where it's hotter than a deck oven, so you're going to get a little bit of that nice sort of brownish hue to it, you know, that sort of rustic kind of that crust. But you're also not going to, you know, completely dry it out. And I think that 650 is where you get that. I've been experimenting with my uni and I've been lowering the temperature and getting better results. Like, because what I was doing, again, I'm an amateur hack here. I'm working on it. But like when I was at 900, I get the minute that crust would get to that char where you don't want to go any further because then you burn it. In areas, it was still a little doughy on the inside. And by lowering the temperature, it gives it more time in the oven. It's a more even cook. Yeah, so I think something that's hotter than your home oven, definitely, but maybe not quite that 900. I think that 900 is a nice special occasion thing, but I think if you're looking for that balance, I think 650 is that sweet spot.
Yeah, I think it's that black char that's also edible. I mean, I wouldn't trust myself with a 900-degree oven. I will say, though, to your point, one of the things I've been discovering recently is you know, with grilling, because I do a fair amount of grilling or whatever. And I do build a bit of a live fire, and there's, you know, methods to the madness, of course, but it is a bit unpredictable. But, you know, one of the problems with building a live fire is you gotta build it. You gotta put in the time, put in the fuel and stuff like that. And you have a gas grill or a pan, you just crank it up to a bazillion, flick of the wrist, and you're good to go. What I found is I made really good steaks on not the most intense fire. Like, I've kind of gradually, not super long, but in a more medium heat setting, had a really nice sear without getting that black, but that deep brown, kind of like a medium or light coffee hue.
Yeah, but what you're getting at is, and I'm glad you said that, I think what you're getting at is how we all face in the food world these sort of known dogmas, that this is how you do it, damn it, and you can't do this, and you can't do that, and you must do this, and you must do that. And it becomes like people just parrot this crap without actually cooking. And when you start to cook, you realize, actually, that's kind of bullshit. Like, it's actually not, like, true. Like, you know, there was a period where we were all told you can't put soap on a cast iron pan or the world will end. And then somebody realized, oh, actually, you kind of can. And now it's like, now that the wisdom has come around and it's like, yeah, of course you can put soap on it. It's fine. It won't kill it, you know, like, but there's these things that we're told so often that are just kind of baloney.
Yeah, well, it's interesting too. Like, it's not even that it's like some sort of supposed absolute truth, but I love how you said the world's gonna end.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's the thing. It's like, oh God, what's gonna happen? And I mean, I was one who was like, oh yeah, you're not supposed to watch cast iron. I had my pan still working. And in fact, I think it's the one thing that social media is actually one of the few things that's actually a positive thing is I can literally send a message to Lodge Cast Iron and ask the question, and I'm getting it right from the horse's mouth. And the funny thing is my pan, like, it still works. You know what I mean? Like, it may not look gigantically pretty, but everything I'm trying to do to my cast iron pan right now is just for an aesthetic look. Like, it's a $150 pan, when the truth is, it's just a pan that does the job I need to do. But yeah, absolutely. It's funny. I found this with searing steaks. Is I was trying to go for a look that would look good on Instagram. Like a filter. And it wasn't about like, no, this tastes better. You know, I actually saw my Instagram right now. You can look at it. I was cooking steaks in the Jersey Shore, these tomahawks that not miraculously, they were tomahawks. So I had a huge, crazy grease fire, but I was also wanting to char them and they charred too much. The steaks were fine. People loved eating them because I sliced them up and all that. And, you know, it was on the plate. It was great. But I know that the char was too much, you know, like you don't, you know, I think like I have one of these Traegers and one of the things that is good about it is that slow, even cook. I think slow, even cook is what's applying to your pizza. And like I said,
but
I think
people,
like,
you know, I whenever I make pizza, everybody's like, it's phenomenal. It's great. And it's like, yeah, but I know the subtle differences. Like, you know, your subtle differences, your tomahawk steak, everybody enjoyed it. I don't think they were lying, but you know the difference.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you this though. And who knows? I've had steak at some family member's house, and I'm like, yes. I mean, it wasn't bad, but I was like, it is kind of funny to me. Like, I'm sure when you're making your pizza, you're going through the effort. It's an effort to make pizza, right? If I'm going to get a tomahawk steak, like, yeah, it's going to be like a $60 thing or whatever. And I'm like, well, it's cheaper in a restaurant. But it's funny how some people will be like, oh God, that steak is so expensive. I'm like, you go out to eat all the time. Don't even, I went to the Acme. It's cheap. You know what I mean? It's just a supermarket steak. That's like 3 pounds.
Well, listen, Ollie, before we go, I want to hear about the new podcast.
Sure. So it's called Eat This, Drink That. Myself and Steve Greer, who's a longtime friend, he's a sommelier. He is a beverage industry guy. I met him working booze in LA at a number of retail shops. Now he works for a label. It all started with this conversation of, man, what'd you eat today? Oh, you should try drinking it with this. I mean, literally in this 15-year conversation we've had. So I wanted to take that, put it into a podcast format, navigate the world of craft beer, which is such a big deal, and bourbon, and really ultimately a big part of it was wine, because you know, I'm always looking for a wine that, you know, what's really hard for me is like, you get this wine, you get a good bottle of wine, and you know what it says when you read about it? Will be good in 2040. And I'm like, seriously, what about right now? And then if you want to try and get a blind that's good right now, it probably costs a lot. Or I just wanted to kind of figure things out a little bit and kind of apply what I found about cheap eats, which is like, you know, this is an everyday kind of food. I wanted to figure out everyday drink, or more importantly, understand why some things are the way they are. And like on our last episode, they drop every Friday on YouTube, on my YouTube channel and on Spotify. We did an interesting pairing. We talked about burgers, and on our Instagram live to promote the episode, I got my ultimate In-N-Out burger order, which I swear is amazing and you need to try it sometime. But I had it with a $35 Lambic beer. It's basically a wine bottle, 750 milliliter. To be honest, it was even better with the French fries, but it literally was one of the more fascinating meals I've had. First of all, I never have In-N-Out with beer. You should. Why not? And it was cool to have this $5 awesome burger, certainly awesome for $5, with this, you know, not end of the world, like, oh my God, I won't be able to pay my rent booze. But so it was just a really interesting thing. And Lambics are known to be fruity. This was not a fruity beer at all. It was a Belgian one. Amazing with French fries. Like, if you ever get your hands on a Belgian Lambic that's not fruit, try it with like a calamari frito, you know, like frito misto.
Or if you're going to get French calamari fries, dip the French fries in mayo.
Hell yeah. I mean, always.
Yeah, no. I'm a mayo guy. Hey, listen, Ollie, thank you so much for coming on Eat This Drink That is the podcast. I have always said, the advice I always give people with wine, because I know wine can be intimidating, is just if you find a good wine shop and then just go in and say, like, this is what I'm eating tonight, what should I get? Just this there, if you find the right wine shop. You know, I'm not talking about the one with the bars in the window, you know, that's got the white claw on display, bringing it full circle. I'm talking about like, you know, like a reputable wine shop, you know, where they know what they're talking about. Just ask them. They'll pick it out for you, and you can't go wrong.
Yeah. Now, a good wine shop, it's out there. It's totally out there. Well, especially if you live in a Williamsburg, Brooklyn, like do.
I don't live in Williamsburg, but no,
adjacent.
No, okay. I don't get much into Williamsburg. Cobble Hill, buddy. Cobble Hill. Actually, this summer I'm in the Poconos, okay? The Poconos.
Second home, everybody.
hey, listen, since you segued, if you want to stay in my home, you know, I'm on Airbnb and VRBO, baby. House in the Woods, it's called. Go to House in the Woods PA, or as everybody calls it, House in the Woods Spa. House in the Woods PA on Instagram. You can stay in my home. I got availability in September. It's nice. Anyway, Ollie can see I'm there right now. I got a basketball hoop behind me. Papa shot.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
That's like,
yeah, this is the basement. Yeah, you're game not room,
in the Brooklyn
baby.
Apartment right
no,
now,
no,
are
no,
you?
No, 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 no. The Poconos, the next Hamptons. No, it's not the next Hamptons, but it's fun.
It's the next nature. I like
it's
that.
Nature. It's nature. Hamptons. Ollie, thank you so much, and thank you for listening to Hot Takes on a Plate, which is part of the Believe Podcast Network. Check them out at BLEAV.com. Ollie is getting attacked by a puppy in the background. Also, check me out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, at Rob Patrone TV. Will Ali Khan get bitten by this dog while I do this outro? He might. I'm not sure. So I'm praying for you, Ali. Until next time, crazy. I'm Rob Patrone. Oh, ciao.
He did it. He bit.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.